Stan Gordon is on the line from Pennsylvania. We're talking about the 40th anniversary of Kecksburg, but right now we're talking about some follow-up things, and you mentioned something in 2002. Why don't you elaborate on that, Stan?
Well, back in 2002, as the media was beginning to give some serious attention to the sci-fi investigation and the CFI investigation, what was going on, a number of local people began to come out of the woodwork again. Some more came out who were willing to talk about their involvement and what they saw, even though a lot of them still asked to remain anonymous. But now that there was a serious investigation, they thought, well, now it's time to come forward. Well, there was a name on the list that right away drew my attention, because this name came up like 13 years before that. We'll call this gentleman Joel. He's a retired fellow now. And back then, we had got a tip that he had been down in the woods hiding, had seen a lot of the military recovery operation with the object. And he was contacted at the time, and he would not deny it. He just basically said he didn't want to get involved. He was afraid he was getting in trouble with the government if he talked about what he saw, and he wouldn't get involved. So anyhow, his name's on the list for many years later, so I call him, and it was him. And he agreed to meet with me in November 2002. So I met him, and when I went out to the house, the first thing he said was, "You know what, sir?" He said, "I was going to call and cancel it. My wife is very much against me getting involved in this type of thing. My family doesn't want me involved still." And he said, "I'd rather just forget about it." And then he began asking questions. Like, he still had the main concern was, would the government come after him if he talked about what he saw? And anyhow, we talked some more, and he said, "Well, you know, you're here already. I'll tell you some of what happened." So he gave me a lot of details, and I met with him a number of times after that as well. We have many hours of interviews with him. And he basically went on to tell me that how he knew the area, how he and his brother had seen this thing coming across the sky, changing directions, and later they heard it fell down in that general wooded area, and he worked himself down into the woods with his flashlight out. He knew the general area, and he saw in the distance, like other people described, like flashes of like electricity down in the woods, which is what drew him over to where the thing was. And he said he hid down in the woods, and he said as he's hiding down there, he saw various people coming in, including Army and Air Force personnel. He himself had been in the military, so he knew the type of uniforms or what was going on. And he said, he's describing to me all the activity down there, and some of what he told me was just very interesting, very detailed. He said there was military, Army people down there. He said an Army general jumped onto the top of this metallic object. And he said this officer had some type of a probe, an instrument in his hand that, at the distance he was from it, he said it looked something like a policeman's billy club, but longer. And he said, for whatever reason, the officer struck the object, and that tool bounced out of his hand when he struck it. And he said, and at this point, Joel's facial expressions began to change, and I could hear his voice began to tremble, and I could see he was going to tell me something very uncomfortable. And he said, I swear to God, sir, there was something inside of that thing. And he said, moments after the officer struck that thing, he said, from the front of the object, a hatch opened that swung from the right to the left. And he said, there was like an unusual whirling, hissing sound when it opened up. And he said, all he could see was this real, unusually long arm and two fingers that extended out of the hatch. And he said, it seemed like it stretched like elastic. And he said, the hatch opened up, and he said, from his position distance, he said he's sure there had to be another arm, and there could have been more fingers, but he couldn't see it from where he was. And he said, seconds later, the hatch closed real hard, like metal on metal, and that was it. And he said, at that point, the general jumped off of there, started yelling to the men, and said, "Something wrong. We don't have much time. We ain't got much time." And the soldiers began to work all around this thing, and he described in detail how they strapped this thing and how they winched it over and loaded it onto the flatbed truck down by the woods. They couldn't bring the truck right into the area because of the trees, so they had to winch it over off the side of this field where they hoisted onto the flatbed. And he also described, interestingly, men in suits and hats, like men in dress suits down in the woods, whom he said appeared to be directing the operation. And one thing I'll never forget, he said, I don't understand why there would be politicians down in the woods. He said they looked like politicians at the time, the way they were dressed. And
Yeah, well, that is interesting. You would think the general would be in charge.
Anyhow, you know, you listen to what Joel has said, you listen to what Myron said, and again, neither one's describing bodies, details, or just boasting an arm and some fingers. And very intrigued. And then you got to listen to what the person you referred to earlier was, Don Sebastian. Now, Don Sebastian is a gentleman who lived about 40 miles away in Johnstown, and he was a teenager. Some of his friends, they heard the radio report something had fallen, so they traveled a pretty good distance late that night, didn't know the area, found their way into Kecksburg, and they were stopped by a roadblock of state police and others, and they were told to leave the area. Well, he said, you know what, we came all this distance, we're going to find out what's going on. And there was a girl in the car and her boyfriend, and the girl was crying, she was already upset and afraid, so her and her boyfriend stayed in the car, and Don decided that he was going to try to find his way down to see what was going on. So he hid, and he went past the roadblock, and he found his way over into this other side of the woods that other people describe where a lot of military activity was taking place. And he said he came across two military olive green flatbed tractor trailer trucks. And he stood up, he said he couldn't remember if it was the tire or the bumper. And he looked up and over them, and you could look down into the woods. And he said there were soldiers really close to where he was that were armed right in front of him. He said he sure the reason they couldn't see him was because the truck had two big lights on and was shining down in their direction down to the woods, and he probably couldn't see him for the lights in their eyes. And he said, what's so amazing was, he said, I'm standing up there and I'm watching down in the field, and there's about 100 soldiers or so in a single line formation with their rifles at hip level aiming towards the woods. And he said he's watching this, and all of a sudden as these tremendous loud screams were coming out of the woods, he said it made the hair stand up in the back of his neck. And he said he felt that no human could produce that volume of sound like that, the way it traveled. And he said you could see the soldiers reacting to the sound. And he said he heard a second scream, and he said at that point he got out of there. Now, I must tell you, that is the only report we had that we from anybody that heard the screams. Now, but you also got to understand, most of the people are up on the other side of the road, you know, a fairly good distance from where all this activity is taking place. So, you know, Don seems to be very, very responsible, has no reason to make up the story, and that's intriguing. And then you add to Bill Weaver, who's another very competent witness. Bill was a teenager in 65. He was riding with his vehicle when he heard on the radio about something falling in that area, which he lived close by, found himself over in that same general area, saw various people, saw military presence and other people there. But what Bill described, and other people have described, other also men in white coveralls, like moon suits, being at the scene. But Bill said this big white-colored box truck pulled up near him. Four men in what he called moon suits got out of the vehicle. They were carrying a box-shaped device with about 4 to 5 feet square on a stretcher-like base with four handles, and they carried it down into the ravine, down to where the object could come down. Now, the whole question is, what was that device for? It was too small to put the object in, so did they have knowledge that there was someone or something inside? That's one of the mysteries we may never have any answers for. If these people are credible and they're telling the truth, and I see no reason to doubt their stories, but it's limited information, then we have to wonder whether there's someone or something inside of this object, possibly.
You know, with the anniversary coming up and the big celebration, perhaps, Stan, you'll find even more witnesses, even though time is, of course, not an ally anymore.
And there are indeed many people that I know of and still live around the area that I know have information which have never come forward. And well, somebody out there may have that important clue that can solve the case. For example, I'll give you one thing that we're still hoping what will happen. There have been reports for years that there were indeed photographs taken of the object. In fact, it's very well believed that John Murphy, who was the news director of WHJB Radio in Greensburg, was one of probably the first reporter on the scene, that he got down into the woods before the military arrived, and he apparently did get pictures. And at least one person who worked at the station said she did see the picture. I talked to another man who in the 70s said he saw black and white pictures that some other family had taken of it. But nobody's ever come forward with a photograph. We've had rumors that people have pictures of military trucks, some personnel that were on the scene that night, and if these people have these pictures, they could very much help to close this case.
Now, how would they get a hold of you? You have a phone?
Oh, sure. My 24-hour UFO hotline is area code 724-838-7768. My email address is paufo@westall.com. And, of course, they can reach me through my website, which is dangordon.com.
And, of course, we have a link to that and the email address as well. I want to talk to you before we leave about some other things happening in Pennsylvania. Can you hold on? Okay, we'll be right back, folks.
Oh, it's so beautiful, so elegant.
This is the typical reaction to the most unique gift of love and romance, the fresh California long-stem American Beauty Rose that is dipped in 24-karat gold.
It truly is a gift that will last a lifetime.
Why wait until that special holiday or anniversary? You can show her how much you love her right now. Get a pen and paper and get ready to write down a telephone number so you can order this 24-karat gold-coated rose.
Use any major credit card or have it shipped COD. She will love you for it.
Call anytime Monday through Friday between 8 and 6 o'clock Central Time and talk to a friendly order person who will tell you all about the beautiful gold rose. This radio offers about half what many fine shops in Beverly Hills, Las Vegas, and New York sell this rose for.
The radio price on the Jerry Pippin Show is only $47.95, plus the real cost of shipping. Air Express it overnight or by regular mail. Here is the number to call.
1-800-458-7134. Monday through Fridays, call 1-800-458-7134.
Stan Gordon, 40 years after Kecksburg, we're supposed to know the answers in 20 years. Maybe we'll find out someday. What do you think?
Well, not only myself, but more importantly to a lot of the witnesses who were involved, especially some of the primary witnesses who, over the years, went public, took a lot of ridicule, name-calling. These people would like to have closure once and for all. They would like the government to come out and finally say, yes, we did recover something, even if this was something man-made. Even if it was a Soviet space device or something secret of the government, it's been 40 years later. Technology has changed so much. Why won't they come out and just show what they recovered and give closure to the case once and forever?
It's a good question. I got an email one time from you, and you mentioned it several months back, and it said this month alone we've had incidents reported in 48 counties in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that was actually last year.
Yeah, and what struck me was there seems to be a lot of activity still going on there.
Oh, yes. My most recent report was just 2 days ago. I had a report from several people seeing a glowing something making very large circles in the sky for about 10 minutes. And while I have not been able to reach the one fellow yet, but supposedly he's got some video on his cell phone he took of the object.
What part of Pennsylvania?
This would have been out here in Westmoreland County.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an area along the Chestnut Ridge. Now, the Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range that runs 100 miles long from Preston County, West Virginia, through Westmoreland, Fayette, and Indiana County in southwest Pennsylvania. It's historically a hotbed for all kind of activity. Year after year, we have UFO sightings, Bigfoot sightings, other strange events that have been reported by many different people over this large area. And some of the most intriguing cases probably in history that have been documented in these areas have taken place up there. And every year, including this year, we've had some very intriguing reports come in.
We talked about Bigfoot with you. We could do a show on that alone because you've had quite a few Bigfoot reports over the years, and you really followed that up.
I've investigated hundreds of Bigfoot sightings. We had that major wave of sightings that we investigated back in 1973, which was the biggest outbreak in history of Bigfoot sightings, which occurred from the summer of 73 into early 1974 over a very widespread area, like 7 counties in western Pennsylvania, and down in the east, down in the Pennsylvania Dutch country at the same time. In fact, I'm actually working on a book on it right now because so many people have asked me, you've got to get this information out because it was so intriguing. And That was, as you recall, in 73, was the last national wave of UFO sightings were going on in the country. It was a big year. Well, we had hundreds and hundreds of UFO sightings going on in Pennsylvania all year, and then we had this wave of Bigfoot sightings occur. And then, and again, reluctantly describing some of these events, but very well documented, the fact that in some cases even the state police were involved in the investigations. We had a number of cases very well documented where both UFOs and Bigfoot were seen at the same time and place.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. There seems to be some connection, doesn't there?
Well, we don't know if there's any direct or indirect connection. And, you know, this is very controversial because UFO people don't want to hear about Bigfoot, and the Bigfoot people don't want to hear about the UFOs being connected. My position as an investigator is to gather the information, document as best I can, and let people make up their own minds. I don't have the answers to what's going on.
Yeah, I know. I've tried to get you to give an opinion on that, and you really, really just try to be objective.
Exactly. I do not have the answers, but at the same time, we were on, for example, in two of the cases, we're on the scene relatively short time after they occurred. State police involved in two of the cases. Many, many witnesses. In the one case where it was a multiple witness UFO landing where two Bigfoot creatures were seen at the same time, and a state trooper who came up to investigate a short time later found the whole area self-luminescent glowing where the objects had been on the ground. And Dr. Berthold Schwartz, a famous psychiatrist who you may know of, he spent about a week up here investigating that case back in 1973.
Now, have you personally run across a Bigfoot?
I have never, in all the years, and this is now 46 years, I have never seen a UFO. I have never seen a Bigfoot. Any type of experience first. However, I've been out on hundreds and hundreds, and I've been involved in thousands of investigations. One thing that showed up in many of the reports with UFOs, especially in the Bigfoot sightings, when these things were close by, the animals, especially dogs, but horses and cattle, dogs in particular, it was so amazing to see normally ferocious dogs paralyzed in fear, would not move, would not bark, sometimes wouldn't even eat right for several days later. So we would get out to these areas and see this quite often. This one particular case on this farm, where this creature had apparently come through there several times, when we got there, something big was ahead of us. You could hear it crashing through the field ahead of us and making this unusual sound, one of a number of sounds that people had reported commonly.
What kind of sound? What kind of sound?
It was like somebody with asthma, like somebody taking...
Heavy breathing, huh?
And we did record that sound, by the way.
Do you have that on your website?
No, I don't. There's many sounds we have, but most of the material I have is not on the website, and there's various reasons for that, too. One of the reasons is because we don't want everybody to be able to have that out, because we want to be able to verify what we have from other sources.
Yeah, I understand. I was just looking for a good show, you know. what's piqued your interest in the last couple of years, mostly? What's happening with you?
We're still having Bigfoot sightings. We're still having very interesting UFO sightings. I don't have my research groups anymore. From 1970 and 1993, I had three volunteer research groups that were probably the most active in the country. And the last group that was very well known was called PASU, the Pennsylvania Association for the Study of the Unexplained. We all did this out of our own time and pocket. We had scientists, engineers, and technicians, and law enforcement people, and medical specialists, and we all did this around our jobs. But we responded to the cases quite often, 24 hours a day. So we would have teams quite often or investigated at the scene, sometimes minutes to hours after they occurred. And that was so interesting because that's why we came up with interesting physical evidence. We could document things very quickly. You could see the animal reaction. You could see the physical reaction and the emotional reaction of the witnesses. And there's no way under these circumstances that some of these things could have been fabricated. But also, I must point out something I've found since the time I started and I still indicate today is that when you properly investigate these reports, whether UFO sightings or other phenomena, while many appear to be strange and unusual on the surface, most turn out to be natural or man-made in origin.
In other words, it doesn't bother you to... you're probably happy to be able to attribute these sightings to some natural phenomenon.
Right, natural, something man-made.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you eliminate all the IFOs, all the identifiable other phenomena, there still are many hundreds of cases in Pennsylvania alone that have taken place over the years that you cannot dismiss. Something is happening out there that the scientific community needs to look into.
How about reports of physical harm? Anybody ever been injured or...
The Bigfoot?
Yes.
It's nothing common at all. We have heard very few possible accounts, but nothing that we could really say for sure. It's not typical of the creatures. Many of the sightings we've had around here have actually been daylight sightings. Some have been multiple witness sightings, sometimes multiple creature sightings. And in many cases, as the witness has said, if these things wanted to get them, they easily could have. I mean, we've had cases of these things chasing cars, you know, keeping up with cars 50 miles an hour. We've had reports of them carrying deer over their shoulders and going through cornfields and going at a, I mean, very huge stride. They just cover a long distance very quickly. And, you know, great agility, great strength. And as people said, if they wanted to hurt them, they could easily have done it. They appear to be very curious of human nature, but no cases where anybody that I can think of was actually hurt by one that I can verify.
And as you mentioned, the dogs are usually terrified of them, so there's no pack of dogs attacking them.
No, no. That's, in most cases, the dogs, when they're close by, they just won't respond. I remember one case up in Ohio Pyle where there was an incident with a creature, and the state police had gone up there, and these people had all kind of farm animals. They had, I think, several dogs. And one was a German Shepherd,
mm-hmm.
big
dog.
Wouldn't move. I mean, I remember the trooper say he tried to pull the dog out of the cage, and the dog wouldn't even move.
He wanted to stay where he was.
Yeah.
What do you attribute to the fact we've never found a body of Bigfoot?
Well, that's another entirely different story. And, you know, this is why I'm writing this book on what happened in 73, because of the fact that during this wave, many very unusual things began to show up. You got to remember now, back then as even today, a lot of our reports came in from the police departments and news media, and these weren't UFO and Bigfoot people who had interest in this stuff. Most of these were coming from the general public, who were just frightened and wanted some answers as to what was going on. And some very odd things began to show up as we were out in the field investigating, which began to make us wonder what exactly it was we were dealing with. And I'll just briefly give you one case that was very well documented. February 6, 1974. This happened, and you may remember this. Back in February of 1974, we had a nationwide trucker strike, and there was gas rationing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this was a distance away. We couldn't get up until the next morning because we couldn't get gas. Here's one of these intriguing stories. Here's a woman, lived in the country all her life, not afraid of anything, lived in a little cabin up top of the mountain, heard some commotion, like there was something going on outside by her garbage, by her porch, actually. There had been some wild dogs up there, thought these dogs were back, so she loaded her double-barrel shotgun, so was going to shoot over their head and scare them away. She opens up the porch, turns on the porch light, opens up the door, and standing about 6 or 7 feet away from her is this big, hairy creature. I'll never forget how she described it. She never called it Bigfoot. She said it was a great big hairy ape. It's about 7 to 8 foot tall with its arms straight up over its head. And she thought it was going to lunge on her, so she fired right into it with her shotgun. We found the pellet the next morning in the tree, by the way. She said all of a sudden there's this bright flash of light, like somebody took a picture, and it disappeared right in front of her. It was gone. Now, there's more to the story. Her son-in-law and family lived in a trailer 100 feet away, and they heard the gunshots. They called her on the phone, asked what's going on. The son-in-law grabs his pistol and begins to walk up towards the house, and he said, 4 or 5 of these hairy things with eyes glowing like coals of fire surrounded him. He starts shooting randomly at him and ran into the house. When they looked out the window, here's this object, like a big Christmas ornament with different lights hovering over the trees at the same time. They called the state police, and at that time, because there was some violence on the highways with a strike going on, there was National Guardsmen and state police patrolling together in Pennsylvania. So a small group of state police and National Guardsmen responded to that site. And when they got up there, of course, it took them a while to get up the top of the mountain. Everything was gone. But that's where there was all these animal reactions. The cats were hiding underneath the bed in the house. The baby in the house, which is normally good at night, was crying all night. The dogs wouldn't respond. The horses were up where they never go to feed. And it was just, the trooper said, it was just unbelievable. He said, just to see the animal reaction convinced you something very strange happened up there.
Mm. Well, Stan, it's always exciting to have you on the air with us, and great stories. Let's go over Kecksburg's anniversary again for our listeners. Tell us the date and the time. And
it's going to be December 10th at 1 p.m. at the Kecksburg Fire Department at their social hall in the little village of Kecksburg in western Pennsylvania, outside of Mount Pleasant. I must emphasize, you know, there's limited capacity, limited seating. We have no idea how many people are coming in. But it should be an interesting event. And the firemen, the new UFO Festival Committee, they have some beautiful, I understand, new beautiful Kecksburg T-shirts and caps and some other little memorabilia they're going to be selling about the event. So some people may want to come down just for that.
Well, you know, they can get there early. Lots, I guess the festival starts early in the morning there.
Well, it's not, actually, this is not the festival. That's
okay.
Planning for the future.
Okay, just...
This is just the 40th event in several months.
Okay.
Which is independent, but they're doing their little committee thing as well and selling some of the...
So when they get that TV prop repaired, they're going to have their festival.
They're planning in the future of having some, like a UFO festival, I believe, and other events associated with this down the road.
Well, how difficult is it to find Kecksburg?
It's really not that hard. You know, if you come off the turnpike, it's not that far from New Stanton exit, or if you find a way into Mount Pleasant, town of Mount Pleasant, a few miles from the town of Mount Pleasant. So it's not that hard to find. It's just some.
And it's about, what, 12, 14 miles from Mount Pleasant?
12 miles from Greensburg.
Okay. So there's places in Greensburg that get something to eat.
Oh, yeah.
And then go on over there.
Right. And Mount Pleasant's a nice little community, which is very close to Kecksburg as well. And if they go to my website, again, there's a lot of information on there about activities associated with the event and, of course, sightings. And that's at stangordon.com. And if they're interested in ordering my documentary film, Kecksburg, The Untold Story, it's available on DVD and VHS, and it can be ordered through PayPal on my website.
Stan, thanks very much, and have a nice anniversary celebration. And if you run across something at breaking, I'm sure you'll let us know.
Thank you very much, and have a good holiday.
Okay, thank you.
Right, goodbye.
More on Kecksburg coming up. Leslie Kane, a great reporter, and she works with the Coalition for Freedom of Information in New York and Washington, D.C. She has some very interesting things to say. Next half hour. Don't go away.
WHBB News. They can fall by at the Greater Pittsburgh Airport. Definitely confirm the fact that there was an object in the sky 13 minutes before 5.
I'm learning that this is happening worldwide. What's going on here? What is this?
In March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
Eyewitnesses who saw it say it's like nothing they've ever seen before.
Hear about it on The Jerry Pippin Show.